And we're talking with Todd Endo here on AMOK.com. And Todd is one of the few Asian Americans who were at Selma 50 years ago in 1965. And he went back this weekend to Selma, and he joins us now by phone. Hi, Todd.
Hey, Emil.
So, thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're tired. I guess Selma, going back there, has it brought back all the memories of 50 years ago?
Only, I think, when we actually went to Brown's Chapel and went to the courthouse, which were the two major places that I spent time in. Going to Brown's Chapel, there was a service, Sunday service going on that we didn't get into, but there must have been like about 500 people around it, so they're broadcasting the service out.
Mm-hmm.
And what struck me were two things. One was its physical setting. It's right in the middle of a housing project, which I had forgotten about. And I am almost positive, but don't quite remember where I stayed when I was in Selma. We didn't drive anywhere. So I figured that I was hosted by a family in the Public Housing Project there. And we would just walk from Brown's Chapel to their house.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing about Brown's Chapel that just sort of brought back these memories, I think I have said that we would like have rallies or services once a day in the morning. I think it was in the morning. And it sort of crossed hard to know the boundary between a political rally and a religious service. So this morning there's lots of singing, which I remember. And so some of the songs are things like Oh Freedom, which I believe is a Negro spiritual, which could have been and would have been and probably was sung in African-American services in Slavery Day. But it's also a political song. It's also a song that's used in the Civil Rights Movement. So singing Oh Freedom at Sunday service this morning reminded me of that link between sort of religion and politics that I experienced at Brown's Chapel in 65.
And your religious belief or your religious practices kind of lured you there in the first place, because you had told me in the stories we've done that you had your acquaintance, the Reverend Jim Reeb, in
yep.
Boston when he was killed. That was the moment that struck you that said that it was time for you to go to Selma, huh?
Sure, yeah. I don't think I would have gone had Jim Reeb not been in the news, especially that he was killed, because I knew him through his church. He was a Unitarian minister in D.C., and the summer before, this would have been the summer of 64, summer of 64, I worked for his church, the local Episcopal church, and a local Catholic church in community organizing. Within the neighborhoods founded by those three churches. So
now,
I did know Jim briefly.
I know that the Reeb family was there. I guess you didn't happen to bump into any of them while...
No, they were there?
Yeah, they were there
today?
Yeah, well, they were there yesterday and today, yeah, I believe.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
So, I mean, it sounds to me like it was fairly... I mean, I know you had... you know, a special pass to get into near where Obama was speaking yesterday. But it just seemed, when I was looking at the coverage, it seemed fairly, not disorganized, but it did seem like it was masses of people together, and people had to be fairly tolerant of some of the accommodations, perhaps. I don't know. What was your impression?
Yeah. If the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington a year and a half ago was disorganized, this one had to be four or five times that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the logistical problem, obviously, is that there may be more than one way to get into Selma from Montgomery, but those of us who aren't from this area don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one road going from Montgomery to Selma, and what the news media had said is that they were expecting as many as 100,000 people yesterday, and the news reports today are about 50,000. And getting that number of people in and out of Selma just was very hard.
Mm-hmm.
So we probably spent a lot of time just sort of sitting on the road in traffic jam,
mm-hmm.
mainly going in, a little bit coming back out.
Now, Todd, when you were there...
Part of the course, I think.
Yeah. I mean, when you were there, though, did you get a sense that 50 years later that Selma hadn't quite kept up with the progress that had been made and that Selma had been left behind? What was your feeling? Because there's been a lot of reporting about the blight and about the conditions at Selma.
Yes. I had some visual ones, and that was coming in to town, driving in. I came in a route that most people don't come, apparently. And boy, those houses were really decrepit. I would doubt that they had changed in 50 years. But the main thing was talking with a number of people. And I still don't have much information. But what I do have confirms that three or four people say the same thing. We met people who have worked in the schools in Dallas County, which includes Selma, and Lowndes County, which is the county between Selma and Montgomery. And both of those people who work for the school systems were African American. Say, yes, the schools did desegregate. But now the schools are 99% black, African American. White students, if they're of school age, almost all of them have withdrawn and are going to a white academy, private school.
Mm-hmm.
And so the public schools are almost exclusively African-American and underfunded. So that's one. The second, almost everybody we talk to and just observe, says economic development just has not happened in Dallas County and in Selma.
Mm-hmm.
The political office holders now are all or largely African-American, but they would say, and I don't know this for a fact, that the economic power remains in white hands. So Jesse Jackson today, and I assume his statistics are largely correct, at least something like 40% of the population of Selma lives below, or Dallas County lives below the poverty level, and 65% of the students are below the poverty level. So the mayor, a lot of people were talking about economic development, economic here, and that was one of the questions that I had, and did talk to a number of people, but not enough to get a sure sense of what was going on.
So
what is going on?
So when you were there, did I guess it was a kind of a bittersweet memory of being there and experiencing what you saw compared to what you had experienced 50 years ago? Did you get a sense that there was a whole lot of progress made, or that people had forgotten Selma?
No, I don't think it's bittersweet. I'm not sure that it was any different in that sense from the March on Washington, 50th anniversary of March on Washington.
Mm-hmm.
The attention in both places were, yes, we have made, I think Eric Holder said this, I think it's reported in the Washington Post, a coverage of this morning, I think it was at Brown's Chapel, I mean, where he would say, we have made a lot of progress, and most people who spoke said, we have made a lot of progress, but let's not be satisfied with that. What we need to be focused on is what is left to be done. And that was exactly the same message out of the March on Washington, 50th anniversary, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Is don't just look back upon what happened historically and what the successes were. We need to look forward and say, what are the justice issues today? And a lot, most of them are the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the same. You make some progress, but there's a lot more to be done. And I think that was the message. So it wasn't bittersweet, but it's incomplete, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So people were not saying, let's just rest and pat ourselves on the back for a job well done.
Yeah.
It isn't done.
Yeah, when you were talking to people, were people, was there a kind of a joyous feeling of celebration? Was there a lot of camaraderie? What was the experience when you talked to people?
There was a lot of camaraderie. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was just writing about that. There was much more singing on the marches. Like, there was a reenactment of the march over the Pettus Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And on that one, there was a lot more singing and chanting than there was in March on Washington a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, and the singing kept caught on. I mean, they were the same kinds of, well, we shall overcome was your major one, or we shall not be moved. Ain't going to let nobody turn me around. Those were sung quite a bit. The second one, which may have to do, I'm sure it does have to do with Asian Americans, is there was probably a couple dozen people in the Asian American group that marched together in about five banners, and it got a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of photos, and so we stopped a lot with, you know, 12 cameras out in front, and then people would come up and start asking questions and making comments. And there were a lot of sign, not a lot, there were some signage about sort of multiracial, cross-racial working together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
So I think among the marchers, at least in the dynamics of the march, it was much more joyful and purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington.
Mm-hmm. And
but
so
I also felt that 50 years ago.
Yeah, and
the
so
March on Washington was sort of diffused, and Selma was certainly 50 years ago a lot more focused and focused on specific issues, what needs to be done.
And so you did see Asian Americans there, and there was a definite Asian American presence.
Yes, yes. There were at least three or four different groups, and then a lot of individuals would come up and say they were half Japanese or they were half Chinese. Or they were, you know, two of the news crews were from China, so they interviewed us.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, one thing I had forgotten to mention, actually, which was part of the joyful of the surprises, is I ran into a guy that, Chinese American, who was also here in 65.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't know I existed. I didn't know he existed. And we spent a lot of time just talking about what we did here and why we came and whatever. And it was basically a very similar story about two 23-year-olds back 50 years ago.
And who was this person, Todd?
Vincent Wu,
mm-hmm.
W-U. And he was, he said he had come from China when he was 9 and was current at that time, 23, was in grad school at the University of Illinois. So he and his daughter, daughter was there accompanying him. And that, I guess, we saw a lot of families. Like, mm-hmm. I had actually met two eldest grandchildren with us,
mm-hmm.
who were 14. But in the Asian American group, in every group that we saw, there were clearly mothers and fathers with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were walking, some of them were in strollers, and a number of grandmothers and grandfathers, too, as far as I could tell.
What do you think that indicated, that there was a sense that, hey, we want you to be a part of history, this is a part of our legacy in America, and it was important to be here? Is that the sense you got?
I think so. You know, I talked some, but you could see from their badges and things like that, a number of them were like the Unitarian Universalist Church, and I don't know whether it was one church or what, but they had a lot of people there and a lot of families.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not talk with them in the sense of why is it important for you and your kids to be here?
How about for you? Why was it important for you to have your grandkids there?
Well, they are two generations. They're half Japanese American, half something else. And the two that came are 14-year-olds. So they're just starting high school, and they're just beginning to get a sense of who they are and what's their history and be interested in it. So when they expressed interest, we jumped at the opportunity.
And as I recall, your grandchildren, or at least one of them, is a mixed race, right?
Well, both of them are.
Mm-hmm. And one is African American, as I recall.
Well, that's a different. That's my sister. That's my nephew.
Oh, your nephew. I'm sorry.
My sister married an African American. The two sons, who are Japanese American,
mm-hmm.
married respectively. Someone who is Norwegian and German,
mm-hmm.
and another one is Irish.
But this whole idea of multiracial and biracial, did it hit you that, I mean, was there a sense of unity, that a sense of being in, you know, being all in this together, and a sense of inclusion? Did you get that sense in the march?
I did, much more today than other marches. And maybe I was just noticing it more, but I certainly did notice a lot of mixed-race people there, and there were a lot of signage about that, you know, brown and black, and I think one of our signs had to do with supporting not black power, but sort of the issues related to African American as an Asian American, and I associated myself with that position as well, so that was good, and there was much more of that than I had noticed before, but that doesn't mean it wasn't there before. I just didn't notice.
I remember when we first talked and we did stories about your being at SOMA, you said you identified not so much as Asian American, but as a non-white person in a white America, and that kind of gave you a broader sense of being a part of this movement, and also it gave you a greater sense of empathy. Do you think, did you get that feeling from the African Americans there? That was there a welcoming kind of thing your presence?
Yeah, I don't recall any antagonistic or negative comments, and lots of welcoming comments, as well as about the cameras. Being held by African Americans who wanted pictures, or people, African Americans who would come up to us and say, "Can I get a picture with you?" And they would step in, and somebody would take a picture, you know, with their camera that they wanted to take away. So, that happened a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, many, many times on the Pettus Bridge as we're marching up.
When you're on the bridge, did you get on the bridge 50 years ago, or? I know you marched from the courthouse to the chapel, but this wasn't your first time on the bridge, right?
Oh, yeah, it was.
It was the first time
Not today. We actually were on it yesterday as well.
But when you were at SOMA...
You know, on this trip, this is the first time that I was on the Inman Tennis Bridge.
Mm-hmm. So back in 50 years ago, you were marching from the courthouse to the chapel and around SOMA, but... Never on the bridge.
No. I would imagine, I don't remember that we were forbidden to. If you remember, there was planned the march, another march, across the bridge to Montgomery, but the leaders of the civil rights activities in Selma. We're waiting for the judge, Judge Johnson, to rule on...
It was later in the...
allow the civil rights movement to conduct the march. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a peon, you know, I'm just following orders, so I'm not in the leadership, but I would imagine that they said, we cannot provoke anything at this point while we're waiting for the judge. For the judge to say it's okay to march.
So what was it?
Federal.
What was it?
I mean,
what was it like to be on the bridge?
Oh, not having participated in Bloody Sunday or Turnaround Tuesday. It was, I'm not going to say academic, but I could just be curious.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge didn't seem as steep. I mean, just physical observation as it appears on the in the newsreels. But as you're marching up, you cannot see anything on the other side. So you only when you get to the crest of the bridge do you actually can begin to look down and see what's at the bottom on the other side. So there. But there wasn't any real, for me, either emotional thrill or emotional dread or memory of bad things happening.
Yeah, I mean, but it must have felt, you must have felt a sense of that history, though, right?
Sure.
On the bridge.
I mean, it'd be hard not to, you know, having seen all the newsreel footage over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie Selma about its depiction of that.
Now you said that
it's hard not.
You said you met this fellow Vincent Wu, who was happened to be your age, Chinese American, who happened to be at Selma 50 years ago. When he came up to you, was it just a matter of seeing another Asian person, another Asian face, and then striking up a conversation? How did it come up?
I'm going to have to ask more because a person introduced me to him, knowing that he was there at 65, and finding me, and obviously had told him, "Oh, there's someone else here that was there at 65," and then introduced us. So it wasn't that we discovered it in the process of having a conversation.
And what did you trade notes?
That was really interesting. Huh?
Yeah. Did you trade notes and say, "Hey, remember this? Remember that?"
Oh, sure. Yeah. Finally, I found out what he did. Found out what I did. We had a lot of the same memories, a lot of the same blank spots, and reported it pretty much. I felt confirmed.
What was the thing that bonded you guys when you were talking? You said, "Yeah, that's the way it was." What was it?
That we were little folks. We were 23 years old, essentially not part of any leadership team, and essentially did tasks and that we were told to do that were needed, and didn't question.
But did you talk?
A lot of size of this balance or that balance. And he would say, "You know, we never went over the Pettus Bridge. You know, it was not about."
Yeah.
That would have been dangerous.
But did you talk about why it was important to be there then, and why it was important to be there 50 years later?
Well, not too much. I mean, it came up in the conversation. We didn't get into the background until. Why we went and virtually every other Asian American in the country did not go.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't talk that much about sort of expectations coming 50 years later, except both of us wanted to see it again and experience at least part that which we remembered. Trod that same ground, so we did.
Well, and why was it important for you to be there this weekend?
I have not been in Alabama in 50 years. I have certainly not been in Selma since 1965. So at one level, I really did, wanted to see what is the same and what's different, and what have they fallen behind, or are they caught up, or what are the issues in Selma today? And not just Selma. So I think the issue, reason for going was that we were there. If there was an event in Albany, Georgia, or Birmingham, Alabama, I might not have gone. But I was in Selma. So Selma then is not just about Selma. It's about African Americans, place in American society in 1965 and in 2015. So, I mean, Holder brings up the issue issues of race and police action or judicial action and race in almost everything he's saying now, and there's a report out. So that's an issue that comes up. It will come up and be important, even if it weren't the 50th anniversary of Selma. But because it's the 50th anniversary of Selma, it's easy for it to come up. And so I think in that sense, it's important for a lot of people to be in Selma. Today, and this weekend.
When,
as it relates to these issues that are moving forward through the United States and government political action today.
Now, Todd, we talked about President Obama yesterday in his speech on Saturday, and you didn't really get a chance to hear too much of it, or you were close, but was it just too crowded, or what?
I don't know whether it's my hearing. I do have a hearing aid. My wife said she could hear most of it. But I really just heard, like, some words and not necessarily coherent sentences. So I did hear the reference to Japanese-American internment camps. But I don't know. I didn't know the context of what Obama was trying to say. So I think in the paper, somebody had a news article or column on it.
Yeah, check out. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry about this.
No, that's okay. This is one of maybe Obama's best speech. Well, I missed it. I want to see it on a video.
Hey, go to my...
He was making an impassioned plea about what American exceptionalism means to him in answer to his critics. And what I read in the paper is exactly what I would say, is America is an exceptional country because it recognizes the faults and the missteps it has made as a country, and is seeking to rectify them. And it's just those people who are protesting and working on the inequities in the American system that are the most patriotic.
Yeah. Now, well, I have the full text.
Obama said something along that line, but I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Sitting in the seats, like maybe 50 yards from him.
Yeah. Well, I have the speech online, and I wrote about the passage where he talks about the exceptionalism, but it was really a matter of being inclusive about what makes America, right? About people being from all over. I mean, I think one sentence he mentioned Lewis and Clark, Sacagawea, entrepreneurs and hucksters, all in one sentence, as part of being... You know, the people who have come to America and have made it great. And the Japanese-American reference had to do with the Japanese-Americans who who were here and who, you know, fought to be Americans at the same time they were denied their rights.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was a very, it was one of those rhetorical passages where he includes all these people who were part of America, and it was part of this litany where Japanese Americans, as, you know, Asian Americans were included in this. And he mentions immigrants, he mentions writers, he mentions firefighters. I mean, it was a, it really, I thought it was probably the speech that people will remember when they say, what did America's first African-American president say about race and diversity and inclusion and about, you know, about American society? What did he say that is memorable and, you know, for the ages? And I think of all the speeches that he's given, and I've followed most of them that he's given during his two terms, I think that's, this is going to be the speech. I mean, more so than the March on Washington speech, which, you know, was inclusive, but not in the same way, I think. And it didn't, as you pointed out earlier, it didn't, the March on Washington, the purpose may have been the Civil Rights Act, but it wasn't as focused as the purpose that people had in Selma for voting rights,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I think, yeah, I think Obama took advantage of the history to really just deliver what possibly could be the best speech that he's given on race and diversity. So anyway, that's my opinion. I'm sorry that you weren't able to see much of it, but I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad you were able to share. Any last thoughts about your experience there? I imagine you're going home tomorrow, or you're staying another day, or what's your...
We're going to take our grandkids over to Atlanta, which is about 2.5 hours,
mm-hmm.
and put them on an airplane.
Oh, yeah.
And go back to National Airport and Minneapolis,
mm-hmm.
Respectively, two different destinations. So.
Okay,
and
so...
then we're heading home from there. We're not coming back to Montgomery or mm-hmm. Selma, but continuing on from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the Northern Virginia.
And so any last thoughts about being there in Selma and about this historical weekend for you?
Well, for me, it's as much a learning experience. I pick up every time I speak and every time I experience something new that adds to what I want to say the next time I go out and talk. So this one... It's not nostalgia, but it's a little of that. But it is then learning how much there is yet to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not surprised, but I didn't have enough specifics on what has been going on in Selma, Dallas County, Alabama, even for the last 50 years. So. It's always learning.
And you're happy that you were there?
Sure, very much so.
I mean, one of the key phrases in Obama's speech is that the march is not over. And he talks about future
right.
generations and what the young need to do and what they
sure.
what they will do, you know, as they right. as they move forward. So
right.
it's not done, right? It's not over.
Right. I would still say, you know, if we think the dream is achieved, our dreams were not big enough.
Yeah. Todd Endo, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on with us on the podcast.
Okay. Speak to you, Emil.